Razor Shark commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line. Right. We're waiting there is Randy Mueller, who's going to be director of player personnel for the XFL Seattle, according to these releases that have come out. Congratulations on that, Randy. I know we've been waiting for the team to drop, so excited to see that all play out. Randy, first question I have for you is probably a stupid question for somebody who used to be an NFL general manager, an executive, and an executive of the year. But here in Houston, we've kind of, you know, things are rough. Things aren't great. We kind of feel like we've hit rock bottom. How many wins would you sacrifice if it guaranteed you the number one pick of a draft when your team's not very good?
You're right. I don't know about that question, but that's a mindset that nobody in that building has thought through, that's for sure. They are trying every week hard as they can to get a win. So they don't have their mind on that right now, I can promise you that. But I hear it. Fans come up with that a lot. People on the outside want to secure a number one pick because they think that secures their fate, right, going forward. And it's much more complicated than that. I think everybody hits these lulls where you lose a game against a team that maybe isn't thought of great around the league, and you think all is lost. So I think there's a lot of things to build from for this Texans team still. I don't think they're ready to throw in the towel on Davis Mills yet, although I will say this, the last couple of weeks haven't been his best weeks, that's for sure.
So, Randy, I'm curious about, like, the forward-thinking aspect of being a general manager and stating you have a quarterback that, as you said and we've said all along, they're going to evaluate for the whole season. But I said nothing should preclude them from drafting a quarterback no matter what in the next draft that they have multiple first-round picks in. And unlike a year ago when there wasn't maybe Kenny Pickett, but wasn't really, you know, multiple quarterbacks like there normally is coming off the draft board that looked like they could be franchise quarterbacks, you're going to get multiple quarterbacks that look like they could be that guy. And I said, you know, looking at Nick coming from New England, as a general manager, if you're a forward thinker, you say, hey, I have options on either guy, and if I figure out one or both are that kind of guy, I can always move the other one and get something for him later, but I've got to make sure I get the right guy for this situation, and I really obviously don't think they have the right guy right now.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I will say this. Those decisions are far away still. I don't think Nick, and I'm just using myself as an example, would be ready to go there yet. I understand they have picks and maybe multiple picks, but we don't know how that draft board is going to map out yet. Mm-hmm. I think their biggest needs are going to be obvious to them come Thanksgiving, and that's when a lot of these decisions start to formulate in a GM's mind. That's not to say that Nick won't get around and see these top quarterbacks. If you remember, though, last year at this time, everybody was saying that we had four or five quarterbacks all worthy of being first-round picks. As it turned out, none of them were. Just Kenny Pickett. So we'll see. I just think that the body of work that these college kids have to put forth this year to make them genuine top NFL prospects has yet to happen yet. And so we will see. I do think I saw the same things as you guys did, especially not maybe this past week, but the week before at the end of the game, I had a little confidence. My confidence was eroded in what I saw out of Davis. That last series or two, I just didn't feel like he gave the Texans a chance. And I know he was under the gun, but I just felt for the first time like this game is pretty big for him. I don't know if this is the answer in the long run. So I can feel you. I hear what you're saying. I just think we got to sit on our hands a little bit, gather some more info.
It's Randy Mueller, former NFL Executive of the Year, joining us on the HR&P guest line. We've crunched some of the numbers for Davis Mills and what you would call like winning time when he had an opportunity to be a game winner, not a game manager, lead the offense down the field and go win a game instead of just seeing a game through it. It's not pretty. Now, three games is going to be the story of his career. I'm curious what you think as somebody who's, you know, made a living evaluating football players, because the quarterback position's always tough. Like, you can find a guy with a cannon of an arm, which is attractive, of course. He's the quarterback that doesn't turn out to anything in the NFL. You might find a guy who can put a football, you know, and put out a candle from 30 yards away. What do you think is the most important attribute or attributes for a quarterback?
I think the ability to process information from the pocket. And I'm assuming, we're going to assume that he has an NFL arm and can make all the throws. But the biggest thing, and it's the most hardest thing to measure, because it's somewhat of an intangible, is can he process all the information on a play-to-play basis from the pocket in a timely fashion. That's the thing. And for me, the other physical stuff can come. Either you have that or you're not, or you don't. That's easy to watch and I think determine on film. It's that ability to process information, and the pocket isn't for everybody. But you've got to be able to do it from the pocket to perform in, like you said, winning times, in winning windows of games. And I think that has to be done from the pocket if for the long haul to be successful.
Randy, can you do that if you're 5'9", 5'10"? Like, Tua had that great quote last week where, hey, if I can't see you, I can't see you. Can you do it if you're short?
I don't think so. That's just my opinion. I have nothing against short people. Trust me.
Thanks.
There's not many of them out there that can do it. I'm not looking for that. My guess is Nick probably is not looking for that either. That seems to be the fallback position when you have no other choices, when you can't find 6'3 or 6'4 to do it. Then we fall back to some of these other options. And there's exceptions to it. Obviously, Drew Brees is 6 foot tall. We see Russell Wilson have a great career in Seattle at 5'10". It can happen, but they are definitely the exception and not the norm. So to answer your question, I don't believe so, and therefore my criteria reflects that. I'm not looking for sub-6 foot guys.
So that, and Jeremy took part of the question I was going to ask you, but at least we verified that Randy Newman hates short people. Randy Mueller does not. I'm curious.
Thanks for clearing that up.
Yes. I'm curious as it relates to the game last night and two different situations with two different quarterbacks. I've said I believe Daniel Jones can play in this league and that he hasn't really gotten the fairest of fair shakes with the Giants with all the different coaching and you know, the different debates with the management. And then as it relates to Cooper Rush, I don't think Jerry Jones needed to stir the pot like he did and say there's a quarterback, could be a quarterback controversy and he'd love to have it. But I'm curious from your general manager days, you look at a Cooper Rush and you say, what he's shown me so far, is that enough for a franchise to say, I might in the future look at that guy as a guy that I might bring in that can help my team, whether it be a starter or, you know, obviously he's going to want to start if he keeps playing like this. But then as it relates to Daniel Jones, I saw what you're talking about in terms of presence in the pocket, making the right decisions. He stepped up with a subpar offensive line last night multiple times. He ran. He showed you that he has a ton of ability. That's why I'm not willing to close the door on him yet. I'm curious your perspective.
I agree with you 100%. I have not been one to close the door on Daniel either. I think Daniel has been very limited in the tools he's had around him and the schemes that he's had to perform in. Now, he's made some critical mistakes. We can't make excuses for that at inopportune times. But I, like you, thought he progressed even last night when it was chaos. Now, I understand Brian Daboll has to call a little bit of a different game with Daniel out there, and he may not trust him 100% yet either. But I see signs of him coming out the other side. Now, it's been 4 or 5 years, and you'd say it's about time. But we'll see. Still, though, they don't have a lot of receivers on the perimeter for this guy to go to. They've got to run the ball, and they're doing a better job of that. So I think by season's end, they will have a good gauge on what Daniel Jones is. With regard to Cooper Rush, there's a lot of teams right now that wish they had a Cooper Rush. You're talking about efficient in the pocket, again, being able to process. And I said this last night. I thought the most impressive part of Cooper Rush's game was the administrative part, getting in and out of the huddle, making the right calls, getting the people lined up correctly, all when we're rushing against the clock. This was not chaos on offense, and I thought that was a big plus. This kid clearly gets it. He can slow down the things around him to where he's not operating at a speed that's uncomfortable to him. So I'm looking forward to seeing a little more of him, that's for sure.
Randy Mueller joining us on the HR&P guest line. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. The Texans on the ground were not very good against Chicago. They were flirting, giving up 300 yards, one-dimensional team. Lovie was going some nickel because he didn't love the depth that he had in that linebacker spot. How quickly can you fix what is a hole? And I'm talking about from like an executive point of view. Obviously, I think the personnel is the personnel. It's hard to do in 1 year. But how quickly can you turn it around in the NFL?
Oh, I would think in another year you'll have a much better picture of what kind of team they have. I think the amount of change in a roster, you might be able to swap out a quarter of it in an offseason, and that's a lot. I know when I took over the Saints in 2000, we swapped out about two-thirds of what it seemed like, but they were really bad. So I think Nick's going through that. He's got to fit it with the right scheme and the right people. But I would think after a couple years, you've been able to change the criteria that you're looking for to adjust the roster. So I wouldn't be too harsh on them this year. Obviously, they can't allow 280 yards rushing against anybody and expect to win the game. But I think Lovey will shore up some of that with some discipline and some details with setting the edge and some things that they can do internally. But as far as the roster goes, their hands are tied right now. So what you see is what you get for the next 12, 14 weeks.
Randy, I'm curious because I think we can all agree that Caserio nailed this draft in terms of what he's been able to do in each of the rounds. But as a general manager, do you have a certain like prognosis per where the pick was made as to how it's going to relate to your franchise? Like to have a running back like Pierce in the fourth round end up being your starter rather quickly, you obviously would think is a win. But most fourth and fifth round picks, are they basically depth picks and you're hoping maybe one or two of them end up being starters? Obviously, first-round picks you would expect to be a starter either day one or relatively soon. And then I'm wondering if you have, like, per round, where those guys should end up being contributors on your roster.
I wish you could forecast that detail, but I really don't think you can. I think, for example, if the running back got picked in the fourth round, my guess is the Texans had him in the second or third round on their board. So they thought a lot of him. Usually, by the time you pick a player in that part of the draft, you're picking him out of a round that you had him stacked ahead of that time. So I don't really remember ever capping a player. I think you're always looking for value in those top two or three rounds. You know, you're looking for value in that this is a guy that in the first round we would be willing to give a second contract to. I think that's a whole other strategic level when you're talking about picking players early. But I think for the most part, in the Texans case, they're taking the best available players right now. And that means, hey, if we don't think we need a running back, but we have him in the second round and he's there in the fourth, we got to pick him. That kind of scenario.
So essentially the intangibles, you know what you know and what you've seen and when you work a player out. But if on your draft board, a Davis Mills might have been projected if he had stayed a year, a first-round pick, or a Justin Reed was a third-round pick that had first-round talent, and you start looking at it, the intangible might be, well, we had this guy rated way higher and he's still there. Though we might be needing a corner, we should look at this guy, too, because the value may be too good to pass up.
100%. That's the way good drafting teams do it. You have to be somewhat, not somewhat, you have to adhere to your board that you spent 12 months setting and valuing and figuring these players out. The projections from the outside world mean absolutely nothing to the guys on the inside. They don't consider those. That's not an issue. Doesn't matter if Mel Kiper has a guy ranked here or where, and I love Mel, but it doesn't really matter inside the building. Plus, you're the only guys that know how the scheme fit works. So at the end of the day, you've got to find the best player for you, and it doesn't matter if he fits for anybody else or not.
I think it's the one thing that we overlook the most as fans and people watching from the outside is the scheme fit and the importance that has that we just really give it no weight to whenever we're talking about the draft. Randy, always appreciate the insight. Great to have you on as always and hope to catch up again very soon.
Thanks, guys. I enjoy it.
You got it. Randy Mueller, former NFL Executive of the Year, football GM, podcast on The Athletic, and also Director of Player Personnel for the Seattle XFL franchise, which is very cool. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Mueller talked about how Nick Caserio isn't worried about the 2023 NFL draft just yet. Do we believe that? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Look, Texans play again on Sunday. They play the Chargers. They beat up on the Chargers last year. Do you think they can do it again? Well, if you think so, you have a chance to capitalize on some cash. And if you're going to do it, you should do it on BetUS.com. Back for their 28th year of NFL action, they're going on 3 decades. Industry's biggest sign-up bonus up to 200%. BetUS offers their members the opportunity to cash in on all of your favorite leagues. NFL, college football, Major League Baseball action still going on. Playoffs are right around the corner. We talked earlier about the NBA. That's going to get geared up here pretty soon as well. BetUS also, look, if you're sports betting, you're sweating some of those sports bets, well, how about you take advantage of the new casino games while you're sweating them out, including the coolest European slots, live dealers waiting for you at the tables as well. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity. You need to know that you're going to get paid, and you need a sportsbook that offers everything, everything you can dream of. They have it. Live betting, MMA, golf, horses, esports, and all kinds of crazy bets in your favorite parlays. Call right now, 1-800-79-BETUS. That's 1-800-79-BETUS, and they'll walk you through setting up an account. Nobody in the industry gives better bonuses than BETUS. Join now, mention 97.5, and you get up to 200% in bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody beats that. Head to BETUS.com. Join today. That's BETUS, where the game begins.
ESPN 97.5. Listening to the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Few things that Randy Mueller. I didn't catch the joke that you said to him, by the way. What did you say, Newman? Randy Newman?
You're not a music aficionado.
I know he's a musician.
Randy Newman sings the song Short People Have No Reason.
Oh, I didn't know he sang that song.
Yeah. And so it was
Do you think Randy Mueller got it?
He absolutely did, because he said
it. Or is he just being nice?
He got it.
Yeah. He says that Nick Caserio is not worried about the 2023 NFL draft yet. Do you believe that?
I don't. I think Nick's the kind of guy, forward thinking, that's watching everything on a daily basis. I think that when he said what he said, you're not rationalizing the fact that he's putting scenarios together for his draft in a multitude of ways, and there's at least one scenario that involves a quarterback in the first round, and there's another scenario that's involving if you got one of the top three picks in the draft.
I think that there's some truth to what he said. Like, Nick's not game planning, right? He's not, and it's pretty much what you just said. He's not worried about who could be off the board at number three. It's more about collecting the information, trying to evaluate the prospects that are going to be in the draft. Every GM's thinking about the future. Every GM's thinking about the college prospects that are down the pike. If you're not doing that, then you're playing from behind. You're just doing your job if you're watching these dudes each week.
Right.
And Nick Caserio is. I've seen Nick Caserio at U of H games. I've heard Nick Caserio talk about his weekend plans. I've heard him talk about his draft board even like 3 years down the road. So they're always, evaluating players, but they're not thinking about who they might take. They're not thinking about who can currently fit, what we need. It's always in the back of your mind. It always is something that you're doing. But I agree that he's not worried about, okay, we're gonna be on the clock with pick number one. We're drafting Bryce Young.
Mm-hmm. No, he's putting scenarios out there right now for the multiple first-round picks, for where they could possibly land, and then for, as it relates to his team, needs that the team is going to have. Because in the back of his mind, one thing he does know is where they have his shortcomings right now, where he wasn't able to fortify the roster a year ago. And the fact that if it's a more glaring need, because it keeps rearing its head week to week with, like you said, from linebacker play, as Lovey blamed, but regardless, stopping the run, now that they've paid some attention to the secondary. And then tight end, wide receiver, offensively, and you're still going to have to enhance your offensive line because you don't know what they're going to do with Tytus Howard, and you know that sooner rather than later, you're going to make a decision on Laremy Tunsil. So for the long term and for the short term, you know where your needs are going to fall, and that hasn't even addressed the quarterback position. But then you factor in the most important position on the field and know there's going to be multiple guys available that you have to consider.
I think you let your mind wander, though, sometimes, too. Like, what would Levis look like in a Texans uniform? What would Anderson look like in a Texans uniform?
Could he stomach a shorter quarterback like Bryce Young?
That's why I asked Randy that. Beat you in the pocket. He said that's the best at make good decisions from the pocket is what he said. Because I think decision making is the most important thing that a quarterback can do. He mentioned you have to have the baseline arm.
Would
the baseline
you argue with
size.
Me that might be Bryce Young's most biggest attribute?
No. He's got some elusiveness
that I think
is really good.
His decision-making on the
and
field
he's so
in real
smooth.
Time.
Yep. Like, that's like, you know how I feel about quarterbacks coming from powerhouse programs. Yep. I hate it. Mm-hmm. It makes me nervous. I can't stand it. They're throwing to first-round receivers behind first-round offensive linemen behind you know, that are handing it off to first round running backs. And quarterback being a position that you're dependent of all of your other players, it's going to elevate you as a prospect. So I cannot stand quarterbacks that are coming from absolute powerhouse college football programs. It's probably why I gravitate to Levis a little bit, because Kentucky's not a powerhouse yet. They're in the top 10. Why? Because I think he's really good. Bryce Young is like the exception for the rule for me, though, because of his play style, because of his poise, because of his calmness in the pocket, like Randy Mueller's talking about. My biggest hang-up, and it's not even a hang-up for me, because I disagree a bit with Randy, and I disagree with like what I believe to be the philosophy of Nick Caserio. I don't know it for sure, mm-hmm. just kind of reading the tea leaves. Randy Mueller said, look, I don't think a short quarterback can do that. Randy Mueller's anti-short quarterback. Nick Caserio's never had a short quarterback in his tenure with the Texans, albeit very small. But also in his previous stop in New England, they never had a short quarterback.
Right, no. And I think that you have to look at tendencies of an organization when he was there as long as he was. As there, even when I said you draft a quarterback no matter what, because the other thing that they've, you know, when I, if I'm going to say that New England was always bullish on taking another quarterback even when they had one, because they can, you know, figure out and analyze on the fly and get a return on him either way. That's why I also would say you're right. If you look back, and after you pointed it out too, I went back and looked, and he did not have any small quarterbacks with Belichick. So why would he then all of a sudden figure out that that's what he needs now? You can say, well, how does he feel about Russell Wilson or Tua or Baker or guys like that, Drew Brees, and then figure out if maybe there's a guy on the board that maybe could change his mind. But the tendency is there to believe that he's not going to take a small quarterback. Then you have to analyze how many good quarterbacks are going to be on the board that aren't small quarterbacks. If you have multiples, and you have multiples that you really do believe, and the big thing for him is going to be, if there's a guy that catches his eye that just has everything, that you don't have to worry about it unless it's Bryce Young, because of the fact that there's, unlike a year ago, 3 to 4, maybe 5 quarterbacks that could be considered taken in the first round, makes the choice a little easier. If you're, it's like when we said you're on the fence between Sauce Gardner and Stingley.
Uh-huh.
Well, some general managers would say, if I know that there's, you know, two guys at the top of a position group and they're basically even, but one guy doesn't have major history with foot injuries, and that's so hyper important to any position, but especially at the defensive back, that a lot of GMs would have gone with Sauce. But if you just could not be convinced to take otherwise and Stingley was your guy, then you trust your druthers, you go for it, but you also live with the results of what happens afterwards. And I think that the one thing that Caserio will still, maybe it won't be the difference in his decision making, but it will factor in, is if I can make a safer pick, do I do that? Because there's multiple guys that could be franchise quarterbacks in this draft as opposed to a year ago.
Play it, break a tie type of thing.
Yep.
713-780-ESP and the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Lamont asking us on Twitter, out of curiosity, do y'all still think Caserio nailed the 2021 draft? Seth made a very good point this morning. I guess he was listening to the Highway of Hell. We in Houston compare players to Houston. He flat out called the linebacker corps specifically, I think he meant Camus, Grugier, Hill, mm-hmm. trash. If you listen to the Killer Bees after week one, serious concerns about the linebacker corps that this Houston Texans team has. Christian, I think we even talked about this in the offseason. Like Kirksey, Camus, Grugier, Hill, Kevin Pierre-Lewis, those are guys, man. Those are dudes.
I had fun with the Kirksey thing because he was called a star. But I saw enough of them in Green Bay to know he's not a quality linebacker in this
they're
league.
They're roster guys, right? Yep. They're roster guys that are like they're fine to have
it's
on the roster.
It's a fighting Rex Burkhead, yeah. Maybe a little more.
They're quality backups. I think that they would be quality backups on a good NFL team. The linebacker corps, outside of the quarterback position, I would say is the biggest weakness for this team. Like, you don't have any dudes there. And you're hoping that Christian Harris maybe surprises and can be that dude. But Lamont talking about, do you think Caserio nailed the 21 draft? I don't know why the linebacker core would be considered with the 21 draft. Like, you drafted Garrett Wallow, but Garrett Wallow is a 6-round draft pick. Right. You're not trying to hit home runs in the 6th round. If you do, that's great, but no one's expecting that. It's hard to grade the 21 draft because you didn't have a first or a second.
Right, it's based on where you were picking. As much as anything else, most guys nail the first round pick every year or multiple years, right? Because it's pretty much a clear cut, easy decision based on the team's needs and the players available and how they're ranked. But it gets more challenging. And I always go back to the Rick Smith era where his 3rd, 4th, and 5th round pick success was awful. And in 1 year, he had those 3 guys get caught in a hotel room with weed and never to see the field again. And not only you'd say, well, maybe he was wrong, but they could play. Well, how many of those guys ended up with another on another team on another roster and made a team and made an impact? Zero.
Yeah, maybe zero. Now, the whole, like, comparing your players to players in Houston, this is something we talk about a lot, too. Like, we've talked about this Houston Texans roster being perhaps talent-wise the worst roster in the NFL. The skill position players outside of Brandon Cooks, even Brandon Cooks is not playing like a wide receiver one. Is that because of Mills? Is that because of Pep? Is it because of Cooks? It's a combination of all of it. Damian Pierce is a good rookie running back. Is he a top 20 running back in the NFL right now? Probably not. And then, you know, outside of Petrie, outside of Stingley, there's not a whole lot of punch here. There's not a whole lot of promise here. But you do get those blinders on whenever you're in the city. You stop comparing, you know, the linebacker unit of the Houston Texans to the linebacker unit of the Dallas Cowboys. So a lot of times you might see like an improvement at a certain position and all of a sudden be like, oh yeah, well above average the position in the NFL, when in reality you're still probably below average because you were so far away. So I agree with that point from Seth. I think it's something we've talked about in the past.
Yeah, we have. I think that, you know, you're never going to nail everything, right? But look, I think that as it relates to Caserio, and not just to 2021, but if you were on the fence at all, it's like we were looking at the intangibles of what would say that it's a win versus a loss or make a decision for you as it relates to a player. Well, if you had any concerns about whether he nailed 2021 or not, look at 2022, because he nailed the hell out of it. He drilled it, and he sent it home, and he touched them all, and he flipped his bat. Mm-hmm. Because we haven't even seen two of the guys yet, and we know how many starters he's already got. We talked about how many of those guys are going to end up being foundational pieces in year one of a rebuild where you truly have all your draft picks. You have four, maybe five already earmarked players that are going to be foundational, and you haven't seen the two guys from the biggest program on the planet that produced the wide receiver. You hope he get healthy first, but you believe that Mechie somewhere down the road is going to be a quality wide receiver. And you haven't even seen Christian Harris yet, but all signs from everybody we've talked to said this dude's a really good football player.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, the HRNP listener line. Are you going to be okay when the Astros recall Jake Meyers? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Someone just texted us in, 6602. We'll get to Jake Meyers in a second. I want to buy Texans jersey. Which one should I buy? Which player?
To me, man.
I would go pretty...
I think it's Petrie.
I would go pretty hard on Petrie.
Yeah.
I would go pretty
hard. I think if you want the safest bet for longevity with your jersey, I mean, all things being considered...
You couldn't go wrong with Stingley. I wouldn't mind a Kenyon Green jersey. You just swallow me. Be more of a blanket.
You think it would? Mm-hmm. I think that offensive line jerseys aren't sexy. I think that... Petrie is the lifespan of a running back in the NFL from Pierce's standpoint isn't going to be fantastic, I don't think, if you just go by the statistics. I think that Stingley, the only variable is just health, but I think that the safest bet is going to be, from what we've seen, Petrie's going to be a guy that's going to be around and do what he's doing for a long time. I think that would be the way I would lean.
Yeah, Petrie's cool. I go with Petrie. Stingley's fine. Kenyon Green's fine. One of the rookies, maybe even Damian Pierce. Although running back shelf lives... That's how long saying. Would that Damian yeah. Pierce jersey be, you know, valuable? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Would you even dare buy a Texans jersey right now? 713-780-3776.
Some would buy Davis Mills.
I would buy the first-round quarterback, whatever first quarterback Caserio drafts. I'll take that. Are you going to be all right when the Astros? Well,
technically, the first quarterback Caserio drafted was Davis Mills.
Did I say first-round quarterback? If I didn't, that's what I meant. Okay. That's what it first-round quarterback is the jersey I would buy if I was Nick Caserio. First-round quarterback. Are you going to be all right when the Astros recall Jake Meyers?
Well, they're just recalling him.
Yeah.
That's fine.
You're going to be okay with that?
Yeah, we can see if he's over all of the
so you're good
different
with it.
Things that would shake Jake.
I didn't think you'd be okay with that.
I'm fine with look, in two games, I'll be ecstatic about it. You can do whatever the hell you want for the rest of the regular season.
I think he should be on the playoff roster.
Well, that's a different conversation. That's not what you asked me. Well, would I be fine if they recalled him? Sure, recall him once. You know, once you wrap up the American League, you know, have at it. Have fun and see where he's at. And look, we know that James Click thinks that he is their center fielder of the future, and that he is in their long term plans, and he stated it multiple times. But we also know that what we saw with the eye test this season, and specifically the last time we saw him on the major league roster, was a guy that looked shook. He did not look comfortable at the plate, and he was not effective offensively. And defensively, he looked like he had apprehension in the outfield. And those are things you can't have from a guy that plays the game the way Jake Meyers played the game before his injury. You hope that the time with the Space Cowboys has helped, and he's figured some things out, and then you bring him back to face major league pitching, and you see what you got.
Jake Meyers has crushed AAA pitching in September. Now, translating it, what you're doing in AAA versus what you're doing in the bigs, that's, you know, Jason Lane. We saw how that worked out. 4A players, John Singleton, et cetera, Brent Wallace. Now, Jake Meyers
You're bringing back some nightmares.
Those are all 4A players. Oh. All the 4A players that I can think of. Now, Jake Meyers was good last year. Like, Jake Meyers as a rookie in 2021 was good. Like, that's the biggest hang-up of why I'm not going to call Jake Meyers a 4A player.
I believe he has the ability to do it on the major league level consistently, but there's some obstacles he's got to get over.
Oh, there's no doubt he has obstacles. Like, there's a decent chance he is a 4A player. Like, there's a decent chance he's never going to be a good big leaguer. I mean, torn labrums aren't just automatic going to get back and be good forever. But Meyers last year as a big leaguer was fine. Like, a 761 OPS, that's fine. 260 average, that's fine. James Click loves him defensively. He said that he is elite defensively, at least chasing down fly balls, because his arm is not elite. But his range in center field, James Click thinks is elite. So you get 260 from a dude who has elite defense, 7-something OPS. Like, that plays in the bigs. He was not that guy this year. So there is questions whether or not Jake Meyers would be a good big leaguer or whether he's going to be a 4A player. The fact that he was good last year is why I'm not ready to call him a 4A player just yet. He crushed it in Sugarland. There is no doubt that he crushed it in September in Sugarland. 354 average. He got on base 469. He slugged 595. Like, those are incredible numbers. Those were numbers he had last year that forced James Click into bringing him up and calling him up and trading Miles Straw to make him your everyday center fielder. The Sugarland Space Cowboys season ends on Wednesday. They're going to call up Jake Meyers, is my belief. And they're going to give him a shot to at least make the playoff roster. Because right now, if you carry 13 position players, some people think you're going to carry 14 in an ALDS when you only play 5 games. Right now, your 12th position player is Hensley. Right now, your 13th position player is Hensley. Your 14th position player is Jiner Diaz. You can make the case that the Astros in the playoffs will want to keep Jake Meyers over both of them because he is an upgrade defensively in center field and good base runner. It's a good call. And then maybe he can provide something offensively that you don't expect
that Dusty and crew have in having guys that can play multiple positions, which is such a rarity to have multiple utility guys that can play infield and outfield. In Dubon and Aledmys Diaz, you have guys that, well, recently with Dubon, I'm not sure how much I feel strongly about him playing infield. And we know how I feel about him playing outfield. But
he can play them, but not necessarily play them all that well.
But you have two guys. So because you have multiples, it gives you more options and flexibility to say, look, what do I need most in terms of from spot needs? Look, I need a pinch runner here real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Or I need a defensive replacement, and I already tried to make one earlier in the game in center field.
Or just you haven't. Or you're up 2 runs in the 9th, and you want to bring in a better defender.
Sure. And look, at some point, you think about it, and I don't know when it would happen, but you know, we know what Tucker is in right field, so it's fine. But if you take your options are, you could take either and or two of the three of Chaz, Dubon, and Jake Meyers, put them in left and center, along with Tucker in right, and realize how much ground you could cover defensively in the late innings of a playoff game.
Yeah, that's your late inning sub, right?
Yep.
You start Chaz in center field. You start Yordan in left field. You have a 2-run lead in the 9th inning. Jake Meyers comes in for Yordan. You move Chaz to left, and Jake Meyers is your center fielder.
You just better well hold down that 2-run lead because you don't want to take Yordan out of the lineup and then have extra innings.
It is scary from that point of view. To me, there's a 90-95% chance that Jake Meyers is going to be brought up before the playoffs start. I think there's a coin flip chance that he makes the ALDS roster. I really do. And it wouldn't shock me. It's not out of the equation for me that he actually starts a playoff game in center field.
Yeah, look, to me, when I look at it, it's not only just the divisional series. There's a chance he ends up on the rosters at some point in the playoffs. I think you have to be open to that.
I think he can start.
And I think that that's also a possibility. And I think there's nothing wrong with that based on the other options that you have. Because we already know how much in question center field has been. So if Dubon isn't the answer, and you start weighing it out going, of the two, who's a better hitter? Who has the better chance to make contact? Who has the better chance to do a lot of things offensively? I don't think you lose anything and you call a push on speed. But I think that Dubon's so bad most of the time offensively, and he looks outmatched as well, that if Myers shows you at least that or a little bit more, that there's no reason not to have Jake on a roster.
If Myers shows you, like, let's just assume they call him up after the final day of the Space Cowboys season. Their final day is Wednesday, so he would get up with the Astros on Thursday. It would be about, what, five games or so left in the season? Start him in three or four of those games. He has the potential to be your best offensive player in center field. Now, it depends on which Jake Myers it is. If it's the Jake Myers in September, if it's the Jake Myers you saw in the major league level in 2021, that is a better player than Chaz McCormick. Now, if it's the Jake Myers that we saw in the big leagues in 2022, doesn't belong on the playoff roster. So that's kind of the final question that the Astros have heading into the postseason.
Is he better in your mind than Dubon?
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that's currently, right now.
Sure, but you can keep both of them on the playoff roster.
You can, but I'm just saying because obviously this team looks for options all the time and as many options as they can have.
Uh-huh.
Well, you've got speed with all three of those guys from a base running perspective. Defensively, the big question to me is, because we know, unlike we don't see things the way Dusty does in terms of Dubon's arm. And
he loves Dubon's arm.
And I don't understand it. But when you look at it and then you as that relates, Jake, because whether it's just healing that still hadn't been done,
right,
or there's another process that has to happen in the offseason or procedure, his arm looks messed up. So you have to weigh who has a better arm of the two, who has a better glove of the two. Again, I would say from a glove perspective, it's Jake, except for the Jake that I saw when he came back was gun shy around the warning track and the wall. And when he dove inward for baseballs, he always came up lame holding one of his shoulders.
Yeah, Flimsy's asking, why would you start Myers over McCormick? Because if it's 2021 Jake Myers, he's better than Chaz McCormick. But if it's 2022 Jake Myers, he's not better than Chaz McCormick. Perhaps it's the final question the Astros are trying to find the answer to before the regular season ends. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
Texan asked a great question, too. We know that JV lately has wanted Dubon as his personal center fielder, and we've made light of it.
Well, we don't know if JV wants that.
Well, it seems
that way. Dusty says he likes Dubon in center field when JV pitches so he can throw out the runner going first to third.
Would JV and or Dusty or one of those E's on the roster that makes decisions be more inclined to say, I'll take Jake and I'm okay with Jake instead of Dubon in center field? Because that's going to be a big thing. Do we think that he can shag flies as good or better than Dubon, but he gives you a better chance offensively at the plate then, and you weigh the arm strength as well? Which one is JV okay with it, and which one gives you a better chance in center field if it comes down to those two? Because I'm with you. I'm with whoever suggested it. I'm firmly in the belief that the best center fielder on the roster for this season is Chaz McCormick.
713-780-ESPN, unless Jake is 2021, Jake. We'll see.
It's a big if. That's why you bring him
up.
It
is a big if. Yeah, it is a big if. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Cooper Rush, if he was the quarterback of the Texans, would they be 3-0? We'll ask the Wheelhouseman what they think of that. Skiller Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Brannon.
It's my guy pitching tonight. He takes the mound at Minute Maid Park. Louis Garcia.
Yep.
Louis Garcia starting for the ill-struck Lance McCullers.
Discomfort somewhere. We don't know where.
Yeah.
Digestive? Mm-hmm. Nasal? Who knows?
Maybe it's just the allergies in Houston. Maybe
the D-word will be used.
Maybe it was the fall crispness this morning that led to Lance McCullers falling ill.
Jake Asman, speaking of falling ill and discomfort,
Jake
Asman had to suddenly face discomfort yesterday because of the wheelhouseman falling ill and
I thought it was a great
celebrating
show.
Holidays.
I thought the show was fantastic yesterday.
The show must go on.
The show was great.
Thank you, Jeremy.
Cole was fantastic.
I thought it was
Andrew
Jeremy.
Was fantastic.
I actually thought it was Jake Jr. I had never met him before, but I was like, they're related.
You thought they looked alike?
A little bit.
I don't see it.
Okay.
Do you see it, Jake?
I do not see it.
Yeah, I don't see it.
Well, then it's definitely accurate.
You look nice today, on. Jake. You have plans after the show?
No, I just, it's kind of what I always wear.
I would disagree.
More
you
golf.
Don't go, you don't go golf, polo very often.
More golf attire.
Yeah, you don't go polo very often.
I feel like I go polo half the time.
Really?
Yeah. Combination of either polo or t-shirt, but
I thought you were more of a. I thought you were more of a t-shirt guy.
And then usually shorts or jeans. And that's.
We're doing a billboard for Doc Linville after this, so we've got things we've got to do.
Are we doing a billboard for Doc Linville?
It kind of looks like Don Mike.
But we could.
Y'all both have the hair done. It looks very, very good.
1 year ago, we had it done.
Yeah.
Over a year now.
It's like y'all picked today to just, you know, let the locks flow.
No question.
They do. They look fantastic. Yeah. They both look very
good. I had no hair. Now I have hair.
Yeah. You're just sticking with yours the way it is?
I don't know.
Ducktailing back is still in question.
It's outrageous.
You have some nice flow back there, it looks like.
It is outrageous right now.
He's got a party in the back for sure.
Can I let you in on a secret?
Are you going full mullet?
I have a 4 o'clock today.
Oh, there you go.
I have a 4 o'clock
today. Today's the day for everybody.
Yeah, it's getting a little out of hand. You know what led me to do it is more people are asking me about it, and I hate attention. I cannot stand attention. So like every time I see somebody that I know, oh, you're letting the hair grow, and it's like I don't want to have this conversation.
Just say yes.
I don't want to have the conversation. I don't want attention. Time I just out. Want to walk Time by out. You in the hallway, the not speak wait, to you. I don't want it to be a conversation.
This from
starter.
A guy. Who, to surprise me, but you know it was more than that, he was contemplating it for a while. Mm-hmm. He not only, when we talked about it a few last week with a segment, he popped the top on his lid to show me he had a man bun underneath.
Yeah. I mean, it's different between 12 to 3.
A man bun, like a Luis Scola-esque man bun.
Yeah, it's different between 12 to 3.
If they ask you, are you growing out your hair, and you just replied, yes. How much longer do you think this conversation would
take? No, I've had conversations about it. Like, what's going on with the hair?
What is your wife
How long do you plan on doing it? My wife doesn't care.
What are your two kids thinking
about? My wife's like, just be sweet to me, and that's all that matters.
Okay.
Yeah, she doesn't care. I think she prefers it long.
She's so full of
it. No, she's the one rule that she's put down on my hair, she does not want to fade. She's anti-fade. That's the only rule that she's placed.
I think that, believe me, speaking from a married man, your wife's opinion matters.
It matters to me, yeah, but she
and you
said,
could say that between 12 and 3,
no,
but
I
think between 3 and the rest of the day and evening, if she said, you know what, Jeremy, I'm not digging
I've
that.
Asked her. I've asked her. Okay. I've asked her. I said, how do you,
but
how
her
should
opinion
I get it
matters.
Cut? I should, yeah, it matters to me, but she doesn't have one. How should I get it cut? She says, I like them all, just don't get a fade.
Do you give opinions all on her hair?
Shave it all off then.
Her hair is beautiful, always.
Shave it all off.
What if she's like,
I
hey.
I won't do that.
What if she got like a haircut, a different style, and you personally didn't like it?
Well,
she asked for an honest opinion. What would you say?
I have told her I don't want like a bob and I don't want it short. I have told her that.
Okay.
I have told her that. Which I feel, which since having birth with Branham baby, I'm never telling her anything ever again.
Were you tiptoeing a little bit when you made that statement?
Absolutely not. I'm brutally honest at all times. Brutally honest at all times.
That's a good relationship.
I'm brash.
Right?
Yeah,
your marriage might be still in the fetal stages then.
Not open relationship, open lines of communication.
Your marriage definitely could still be in the fetal stages overall.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Boy, I'll tell you what.
I don't think so.
I learned when passing the fetal stage, there are multiple times. There's many a time when you know what you could say if you were brutally honest, but you know in your best interest what you should say.
So how honest are you, Joel? You ever going to tell your wife, who has a phenomenal on-air career, hey, I don't really like this hairstyle. I'd prefer you to do this.
No, I'm not.
You wouldn't be honest with her.
I'm a padded honest guy.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
you're so
I won't
honest.
Be brutally honest. I will be padded honest.
Okay.
When asked, even then, I will be padded honest.
You massage it a little bit.
In that regard.
If she came home today and she's like, you know what, the executives and I agree with them, I want to dye my hair blonde. What would your response be?
I'll wait and see. Is there a way we can see it before we have to go confirm it?
Photoshop?
How would you do that?
Well, there's many different ways you can do it. Look, even when you're looking at sunglasses online now, they can actually do the check. You can get like a preview.
You're filibustering. You're filibustering right now.
No, because I believe, like for me, she doesn't hold back on anything and everything. She believes I can take it and she just dishes it out. But for me, what I've learned is even the most, in my mind, innocent, honest conversation quickly can be where she's on the defensive, and I'm like, I should have never said anything. Because it's not like, it wasn't like a major thing. It was like, boy, I, you know, whether it's like the color of a dress or something like that. And I'm like, oh, it's harmless. I'll just say, you know what? That's not your best color. Whew. Mm-mm. Don't need that headache in my life. I'll fight different battles. You'll learn someday, Jake.
No, this is great advice. I'm learning a lot from you.
Is there a certain age, Jake, that you want to be married by?
I don't have a timeline. I'm, you know, Jeremy, I'm married to the game right now.
Oh, boy.
I might be a bachelor for life.
You know, some women are that way. Like, they have the clock, right? They want to be married by a certain age. They want to have kids by a certain age. I was just wondering if you had that going on.
No, you know, we're taking it one day at a time. You know, we had a great game plan in place, and we're just trying to attack each
Who's
day of
we?
Life. Me, myself, and I.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The three of you. Yeah, okay, I was just checking if there was a we weren't aware of. By the way, is there a certain age you can't wear a jersey anymore? Because you still are a jersey guy.
I am.
There were a lot of people that I used to work with that are friends of mine and others that say there's a certain age that adult men should not wear jerseys anymore.
So I disagree with that. I don't wear jerseys often. It's only when I'm like going to a sporting event or like I'm watching like some sort of sporting event. But I think you could always wear jerseys. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Because there's other guys that say, well, there's a philosophy that you can wear an old school guy, but you can't wear the jersey of a guy that's younger than you are.
I've heard that as well. I think if you want to have that rule, that's fine.
No,
but
older than you are.
Yeah.
No, or Wait. Younger. No, you can't be older than the guy whose jersey you're wearing.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be wearing Jeremy Pena.
You have to wear a jersey that the dude's older than you.
Right.
Yeah. No, I would wear I wear a Case Keenum jersey. I'm older than Case.
By what month?
I don't know. It's probably pretty close. Yeah. It's probably closer than it should be.
Because I'm thinking, I don't believe in any of that, but then I start thinking about it going, I understand it to a certain degree that you don't wear the jersey of a guy younger than you, but I think you could wear a jersey however long you want to wear a jersey if that's the way you show your love and for support for your team.
When you're a kid, like I remember in middle school or high school, elementary school, like kids wear the jerseys like all the time. The only time I'm wearing a jersey at this stage of my life is like if I'm going to a game or I'm like I'm watching.
Or game day, right?
Yeah, or game day. Like I'll wear a Jets jersey on Sunday most of the time, like as an example. So that's kind of where I'm at with jerseys. But
I was
you got a Zach Wilson jersey?
How many?
Zach Wilson jersey?
I do have a Zach Wilson jersey.
Nice. Is he going to play Sunday?
He should play. They haven't cleared him yet, but I think he will. I cannot watch Joe Flacco again. He is so bad.
What's going to happen if Joe Flacco plays? What are you going to do?
I know you're going to watch. It's just pain.
That's an empty threat.
They might be embracing the sun.
They shouldn't be, though. They have talent on this team. Yeah. They have been horrendous on offense outside of 2 minutes against the Browns.
I saw you on Twitter advocating for Vinny Testaverde instead of Joe Flacco.
Yeah, he can wear that jersey.
I most definitely was not, but I would take Vinny Testaverde over Joe Flacco. For sure.
Cooper Rush last night led the Cowboys to victories. 2-0 as a starter, by the way.
3-0.
Well,
he won
this
last year.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I meant this season. He's 2-0. He has all the Dallas Cowboy wins so far this year. If he was the starting quarterback for the Texans, would the Texans be 3-0 right now?
I think they would.
I do too.
We're actually going to be talking about this during our show today. I think they would, right? I mean, what's the job of a quarterback? Execute in the fourth quarter. The thing you could say about Cooper Rush and his two starts this year, and even the start last year. Three career starts, three career game-winning drives in the fourth quarter. And a game-winning drive is not impossible for a quarterback to make. You get credit for a game-winning drive if your team is trailing or tied, and they score a field goal and go up three early in the fourth quarter, and you eventually win that game. That registers as a game-winning drive. And that's all Davis Mills had to do in any of these first three games, and they couldn't do it. So I think they're definitely at least having one win by now if Cooper Rush is the quarterback over Mills.
I think they got them all.
And I like the passion you guys had yesterday listening to you on the way home and the fact that, look, I think you're in the same camp as I am. And I said, you know, there are people that had the General Mills scoreboard. And the General Mills scoreboard was either you were Mills Mafia or, in my opinion, you were over the Mills. And I am over the Mills. I am over the Mills, and I am done with him, and I've seen enough, and I can't believe with the eye test and all the other things that I've seen, and you can make the comparisons as we did with other players as well, that I can't believe this is the guy that's going to put it all together like that and suddenly be your franchise quarterback and be good at it.
Agreed. I wouldn't bench him, though. I've heard some people say, play Driscoll or play Kyle.
Nope.
I would keep giving Mills an opportunity to see if he can magically turn it around, but I mean, let's be real. It's going to take a lot for him to undo what has just been an abysmal start.
Plus,
to the season.
Whether it's for you or for another team, you have to determine what he truly is.
Maybe he's your long-term backup.
Right.
But
or another team says they see more than you see in him, and they would be perfectly happy if he was top 15, top 20, and then you could get something for him.
You know what I would like more than a long-neck quarterback? Long-neck cold beer. What's coming up on the wheelhouse today?
Cold beer. Now, BK's still out today, so there won't be any.
Oh, is he really?
Maybe so.
But I thought Cody was sick.
Well, Cody's back.
So the it's a traveling holiday, or it's more than one day holiday?
So BK's off for the Jewish holiday.
It's a good
Rosh Hashanah is a 2 day affair.
It's a good gig if you can
I didn't
get
know.
It.
Right. I didn't know it was a 2 day
he'll
affair.
He'll be off. Get this. He'll be off 2 days next week for Yom Kippur. The guy's unbelievable.
Man.
All right.
Who's old Kipper?
I don't know.
Thanks to Sean for filling in for Brendan, which we had a different puppeteer in today. He's blank. I'm Brad, and we'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse is next with Jake Aspen, Cody Stutes at ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Fun sports.